Winston Churchill, from Wikipedia, the Free Encyclopedia. The Right Honourable Sir Winston Leonard Spencer Churchill, KG, OM, CH, TD, FRS, PC, 30th of November 1874 to the 24th of January 1965, was a British politician, best known as Prime Minister of the United Kingdom during the Second World War. At various times a soldier, journalist, author, painter and politician, Churchill is generally regarded as one of the most important leaders in British and world history. He also won the 1953 Nobel Prize in Literature, and, in a poll conducted by the BBC in 2002 to identify the 100 greatest Britons, participants voted Churchill as the most important of all. Churchill's legal surname was Spencer Churchill. He is related to the distinguished Spencer family. But starting with his father, Lord Randolph Churchill, his branch of the family always used just the name Churchill in public life. Section 1. Early Life. Winston Churchill was a descendant of the first famous member of the Churchill family, John Churchill, the first Duke of Marlborough. Winston's politician father, Lord Randolph Churchill, was the third son of the seventh Duke of Marlborough. Winston's mother was Lady Randolph Churchill, née Jenny Jerome, daughter of American millionaire Leonard Jerome. Winston Churchill was born in Blenheim Palace in Woodstock, Oxfordshire. He arrived unexpectedly early, when his mother was attending a ball. As was typical for upper-class boys at that time, he spent much of his childhood at boarding schools. He sat the entrance exam for Harrow School, but famously, on confronting the Latin paper, carefully wrote the title, his name and the number one followed by a dot, and could not think of anything else to write. He was accepted despite this, but placed in the bottom division, where they were primarily taught English, at which he excelled. Today, this famous ancient public school offers an annual Churchill Essay Prize on a subject chosen by the head of the English department. He was rarely visited by his mother, whom he virtually worshipped, despite his letters begging her to either come or let his father permit him to come home. Jenny Jerome had a strong personality, and during her marriage to Lord Randolph, she was involved in numerous affairs with powerful men of the day, most with her husband's knowledge. In later years, after Winston reached adulthood, he and his mother became closer, developing a kinship almost more like a brother and sister than son and mother, coupled by a strong friendship. He followed his father's career keenly, but had a distant relationship with him. Once, in 1886, he is reported to have proclaimed, "My daddy is Chancellor of the Exchequer, and one day that is what I am going to be." His desolate, lonely childhood stayed with him throughout his life. On the other hand, as a child he was very close to his nurse, Elizabeth Ann Everest, who would be known now as a nanny, and was deeply saddened when she died on the 3rd of July, 1895. He paid for her tombstone at the City of London Cemetery and Crematorium. Churchill did badly at Harrow, regularly being punished for poor work and lack of effort. His nature was independent and rebellious, and he failed to achieve much academically, failing some of the same courses numerous times, and refusing to study the classics, that is, Latin and ancient Greek. Despite this, he showed great ability in other areas such as mathematics and history, in both of which he was placed at times top in his class. The view of Churchill as a failure at school is one which he himself propagated, probably due to his father's intense dislike of the young Winston and his obvious readiness to label his son a disappointment. He did, however, become the school's fencing champion. Section 2. The Army. Churchill attended the Royal Military Academy, Sandhurst. Upon his graduation, At age 20, Churchill joined the army as a subaltern of the 4th Queen's Own Hussars Cavalry Regiment. This regiment was stationed in Bangalore, India. On arriving in India, Churchill dislocated his shoulder while reaching from his boat for a chain on the dock and being thrown against the quay. This shoulder gave him trouble in later years, occasionally dislocating from its socket. In India, the main occupation of Churchill's regiment was polo, a situation which did not appeal to the young man, hungry for more military action. He devoted his time to educating himself from books which he had sent out. The Bangalore Club, of which he was a member, has records, which they display to visitors, showing that Winston Churchill failed to pay dues of 13 rupees due to a financial penury, a debt they believe to be still outstanding. While stationed in India, he began to seek out wars. In 1895, he and Reggie Barnes obtained leave to travel to Cuba to observe the Spanish battles against Cuban guerrillas. Churchill also obtained a commission to write about the conflict from the Daily Graphic newspaper. To Churchill's delight, he came under fire for the first time on his 21st birthday. On his way to Cuba, he also made his first visit to the United States, being introduced to New York society by one of his mother's lovers, Burke Cochran. In 1897, Churchill attempted to travel to the Greco-Turkish War, but this conflict effectively ended before he could arrive. He therefore continued on to England on leave, before hearing of the Pavan Revolt on the northwest frontier and rushing back to India to participate in the campaign to put it down. Churchill had previously obtained a promise from Sir Bindon Blood, the commander of this expedition, that if he were to command again, Churchill could accompany him. He wasted no time in reminding Blood of his promise, and was able to participate in the 6-week campaign, also writing articles for the newspapers The Pioneer and The Daily Telegraph at £5 an article. By October 1897, Churchill was back in Britain, and his first book, The Story of the Malakand Field Force, on that campaign, was published in December. While still officially stationed in India, and having obtained a long period of leave, Churchill attempted to get himself assigned to the army being put together and commanded by Lord Kitchener, and intended to achieve the reconquest of the Sudan. Kitchener was opposed to having Churchill on the staff, feeling he should be back with his regiment in India, but Churchill pulled a great many strings to get his presence approved, even arranging for a telegram to Kitchener from the Prime Minister, the Marquess of Salisbury. In the end, Churchill was able to attend the war after obtaining a posting to the 21st Lancers, a force whose composition was chosen by the War Office, not Kitchener. He also served as a war correspondent for the Morning Post at a rate of £15 per column. While in the Sudan, Churchill participated in what has been described as the last meaningful British cavalry charge in battle, at the Battle of Omdurman. By October 1898, he had returned to Britain, and begun work on the 2-volume The River War, published the following year. In 1899, Churchill left the army, and decided upon a parliamentary career. He stood as a Conservative candidate in Oldham constituency, in a by-election of that year. He came third, Oldham was at that time a 2-seat borough, failing to be elected. On the 12th of October 1899, the Second Anglo-Boer War between Britain and Afrikaners broke out in South Africa. Churchill set off as a war correspondent for the Morning Post, receiving £250 a month for 4 months. Once in South Africa, he accepted a lift on a British Army armoured train under the command of Aylmer Haldane. This train was thrown off the tracks by a Boer ambush and explosion. Churchill, though not officially a combatant, took charge of operations to get the track cleared, and managed to ensure that the engine and half the train carrying the wounded could escape. Churchill, however, was not so lucky, and together with other officers and soldiers, was captured and held in a prisoner of war camp in Pretoria, despite doubt about his combatant status. Churchill managed to escape from his prison camp, resulting in a long-running criticism and controversy, as it was claimed that he did not wait for Haldane and another man who had planned the escape, but who were unable, or unwilling, to risk slipping over the fence when Churchill did. Once outside the Pretoria prison camp, Churchill travelled almost 300 miles, or 480 kilometres, to Portuguese Lourenço Marque in Delgagoa Bay. He achieved this due to the assistance of an English mine manager who hid him down his mine and smuggled him onto a train headed out of Boer territory. His escape made him a minor national hero for a time in Britain, though instead of returning home, he took ship to Durban and rejoined General Redvers Buller's army on its march to relieve Ladysmith and take Pretoria. This time, although continuing as a war correspondent, Churchill gained a commission in the South African Light Horse. He fought at Spion Kop and was one of the first British troops into Ladysmith and Pretoria. In fact, he and the Duke of Marlborough, his cousin, were able to get ahead of the rest of the troops in Pretoria, where they demanded and received the surrender of 52 Boer guards of the prison camp there. Churchill's two books on the Boer War, London to Ladysmith via Pretoria and Ian Hamilton's March, were published in May and October 1900, respectively. Section 3. Parliament. After returning from South Africa, Churchill again stood as a Conservative Party candidate in Oldham, this time in the 1900 general election, or Khaki election. He was duly elected, but rather than attending the opening of Parliament, he embarked on a speaking tour throughout the UK and USA, by means of which he raised £10,000 for himself. Members of Parliament were unpaid in those days, and Churchill was not rich by the standards of the time. While in the USA, one of his speeches was introduced by Mark Twain, and he dined with New York Governor and Vice President Theodore Roosevelt. In February 1901, Churchill arrived back in the UK to enter Parliament, and became associated with a group of Tory dissidents led by Lord Hugh Cecil, and referred to as the Hooligans, as a pun on hooligans. During his first parliamentary session, Churchill provoked controversy by opposing the government's army estimates and arguing against extravagant military expenditure. By 1903, he was drawing away from Lord Hugh's views. He also opposed the Liberal Unionist leader Joseph Chamberlain, whose party was in coalition with the Conservatives. Chamberlain proposed extensive tariff reforms intended to protect the economic preeminence of Britain behind tariff barriers. This earned him the detestation of his own supporters. Indeed, Conservative backbenchers staged a walkout once while he was speaking. His own constituency effectively deselected him, although he continued to sit for Oldham until the next general election. In 1904, Churchill's dissatisfaction with the Conservatives and the appeal of the Liberals had grown so strong that on returning from the Whitsun recess, he crossed the floor to sit as a member of the Liberal Party. As a Liberal, he continued to campaign for free trade. The winnable seat of Manchester North West was found for him for the 1906 general election, which he won. From 1903 until 1905, Churchill was also engaged in writing Lord Randolph Churchill, a two-volume biography of his father, which came out in 1906 and was received as a masterpiece. However, filial devotion caused him to soften some of his father's less attractive aspects. Section 4. Ministerial Office. When the Liberals took office, with Henry Campbell Bannerman as Prime Minister, in December 1905, Churchill became Under Secretary of State for the Colonies. Serving under the Secretary of State for the Colonies, Victor Bruce, the 9th Earl of Elgin, Churchill dealt with the adoption of constitutions for the defeated Boer republics of the Transvaal and Orange River Colony, and with the issue of Chinese slavery in South African mines. He also became a prominent spokesman on free trade. Churchill soon became the most prominent member of the government outside the cabinet, and when Campbell Bannerman was succeeded by Herbert Henry Asquith in 1908, it came as little surprise when Churchill was promoted to the cabinet as president of the Board of Trade. Under the law at the time, a newly appointed cabinet minister was obliged to seek re-election at a by-election. Churchill lost his Manchester seat to the Conservative William Joynson Hicks, but was soon elected in another by-election at a Dundee constituency. As president of the Board of Trade, he pursued radical social reforms in conjunction with David Lloyd George, the new Chancellor of the Exchequer. In 1910, Churchill was promoted to Home Secretary, where he was to prove somewhat controversial. A famous photograph from the time shows the impetuous Churchill taking personal charge of the January 1911 Sydney Street siege, peering around a corner to view a gun battle between cornered anarchists and Scots Guards. His role attracted much criticism. The building under siege caught fire. Churchill denied the fire brigade access, forcing the criminals to choose surrender or death. Arthur Balfour asked, "He and a photographer were both risking valuable lives. I understand what the photographer was doing, but what was the Right Honourable Gentleman doing?" 1910 also saw Churchill preventing the army being used to deal with a dispute at the Cambrian colliery mine in Tony Pandy. Initially, Churchill blocked the use of troops, fearing a repeat of the 1887 Bloody Sunday in Trafalgar Square. Nevertheless, troops were deployed to protect the mines and to avoid riots when 13 strikers were tried for minor offences, an action that broke the tradition of not involving the military in civil affairs, and led to lingering dislike for Churchill in Wales. In 1911, Churchill became First Lord of the Admiralty, a post he would hold into the First World War. He gave impetus to military reform efforts, including development of naval aviation, tanks, and the switch in fuel from coal to oil, a massive engineering task, also reliant on securing Mesopotamia's oil rights, bought circa 1907 through the Secret Service using the Royal Burma Oil Company as a front company. The development of the battle tank was financed from naval research funds via the Landships Committee, and although a decade later, development of the battle tank would be seen as a stroke of genius, at the time it was seen as a misappropriation of funds. The battle tank was deployed ineptly in 1915, much to Churchill's annoyance. He wanted a fleet of tanks used to surprise the Germans under cover of smoke, and to open a large section of the trenches by crushing barbed wire and creating a breakthrough sector. However, he was also one of the political and military engineers of the disastrous Gallipoli landings on the Dardanelles during World War I, which led to his description as the Butcher of Gallipoli. When Asquith formed an all-party coalition government, the Conservatives demanded Churchill's demotion as the price for entry. For several months, Churchill served in the non-portfolio job of Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, before resigning from the government, feeling his energies were not being used. He rejoined the army, though remaining an MP, and served for several months on the Western Front. During this period, his second-in-command was a young Archibald Sinclair, who would later lead the Liberal Party. Section 5. Return to Power. In December 1916, Asquith resigned as Prime Minister and was replaced by Lloyd George. However, the time was not thought yet right to risk the Conservatives' wrath by bringing Churchill back into government. However, in July 1917, Churchill was appointed Minister of Munitions. After the end of the war, Churchill served as both Secretary of State for War and Secretary of State for Air. As Secretary of State for War and Air, Churchill estimated that without the RAF, somewhere between 25,000 British and 80,000 Indian troops would be needed to control Iraq. Reliance on the Air Force promised to cut these numbers to just 4,000 and 10,000. Churchill's confidence was soon repaid. An uprising of more than 100,000 armed tribesmen against the British occupation swept through Iraq in the summer of 1920. Churchill sent in the Royal Air Force and ordered gas attacks on the Iraqis. RAF flew missions totaling 4,008 hours, dropped 97 tons of bombs, and fired 183,861 rounds for the loss of 9 men killed, 7 men wounded, and 11 aircraft destroyed behind rebel lines. The rebellion was thwarted, with nearly 9,000 Iraqis killed. Churchill was particularly keen on chemical weapons, suggesting that they be used against recalcitrant Arabs as an experiment. He dismissed objections as unreasonable. "I am strongly in favour of using poison gas against uncivilized tribes who spread a lively terror." On the possible use of gas weapons, tear gas, in quelling uprisings in the British mandated territories of the former Ottoman Empire, Churchill wrote, "I do not understand this squeamishness about the use of gas. We have definitely adopted the position at the peace conference of arguing in favour of the retention of gas as a permanent method of warfare. It is sheer affectation to lacerate a man with the poisonous fragment of a bursting shell, and to boggle at making his eyes water by means of a lacrimatory gas. I am strongly in favour of using poison gas against uncivilized tribes. The moral effect shall be so good that the loss of life shall be reduced to a minimum. It is not necessary to use only the most deadly gases. Gases can be used which cause great inconvenience and would spread a lively terror, and yet would leave no serious permanent effect on most of those affected." Also during this time, 1919 to 1921, he undertook, with surprising zeal, the cutting of military expenditure and recommended the adoption of the 10-year rule. However, the major preoccupation of his tenure in the War Office was Allied intervention in the Russian Civil War. Churchill was a staunch advocate of foreign intervention, declaring that Bolshevism must be strangled in its cradle. He secured from a divided and loosely organised cabinet intensification and prolongation of the British involvement beyond the wishes of any major group in Parliament or the nation, and in the face of the bitter hostility of the Labour Party. In 1920, after the last British forces had been withdrawn, Churchill was instrumental in having arms sent to the Poles when they invaded Ukraine. He became Secretary of State for the Colonies in 1921, and was a signatory of the Anglo-Irish Treaty of 1921, which established the Irish Free State. This sound file, and all text in the article, are licensed under the GNU Free Documentation License, available at www.gnu.org/copyleft/fdl.html.